This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Tom, push that button.
What's trending at home?
So Republican State Representative Matt Shea from Spokane wants to repeal 1639, and you should be absolutely upset. You should be upset and you should be annoyed because this is wasting our time, and you should not be given any false hope that this legislation is going to pass. It is 100% not going to pass, no matter what you want to have happen, because I would love it if we can get rid of 1639, this anti-gun bill. This bill is a total waste of time. Now, he gave an interview with Como TV, and he says he was inspired to do this bill thanks to a constituent that reached out to him.
The system only works when the governed reach out to the governing. It is the great part of our system that normal folks can just come down to Olympia, bring a problem, talk to their elected representatives, and then turn that into those ideas into action and into legislation.
Now, this constituent that he's referring to, her name is Radonna Devereaux. She's a political activist who's protesting 1639, and she's urging people to get involved.
I would encourage citizens to get involved, regardless of if they're liberal, conservative, if they are passionate about something, get involved.
I totally agree with that. Get involved. We tell you that all the time on the show. We tell you to make sure that you're calling your lawmaker. For some of you, it's actually knowing who your lawmakers are, who your specific representatives are, because my sense is I could just randomly poll people who are walking down the street or listening to the show right now and ask you who one of your state representatives is, who your state senators. I bet you there are going to be 7 out of 10 who listen to this show who won't know. And you guys are some of the most involved people there are. That's a concern. You do have to get involved, and I'm glad she's pushing this idea. But the truth is, number one, this bill has literally no shot, pardon the pun, at passing. You have a state capitol that is overrun with Democrats. They're in charge. They have control of the Senate and they have control of the House. You think these Democrats, who are overwhelmingly anti-gun themselves, you think they're going to give this bill a shot? They do not. They will not do that. They do not want this to pass. And using this as an example of getting involved is the worst possible thing you can do, because it's going to fail, and we know it's going to fail, and it has the impact potentially of discouraging people from getting involved. That's number one. Number two, here's a truth that we all have to understand and accept. All of us have to understand and accept a simple truth. We lost this battle on I-1639. And we can try again at some point. We can put up another initiative. But the truth is, we lost this battle. I'm sorry we lost it. I'm devastated we lost this, because we lost some gun rights. And I voted no on 1639. Most of you voted no on 1639, but the truth is, not enough of you voted no. Not enough of you got involved when we needed you to get involved. But it passed. It's wrong. It's dangerous. And now we need the courts to decide, because if it is unconstitutional, as I believe it is, then we're going to have to put faith in the justice system. But let's be clear here. I can't endorse this, and you shouldn't endorse this if you get upset, as I do, when the carbon tax fee comes back. State Senator Stephen Hobbs of Lake Stevens, a Democrat, who on some issues I actually really like his approach. On this I don't. He's bringing back the idea of a carbon tax. We just voted the carbon tax down again. And I get mad that they're bringing this idea up over and over and over again when we've already overwhelmingly said no. The state said yes on 1639. I'm not going to be a hypocrite or inconsistent by going after a bill months after it was passed trying to repeal it. I'm not going to endorse this. But I am going to use this as an opportunity to remind you, you need to organize, you need to vote, you need to talk to your friends about voting. You need to talk to your neighbors. You need to talk to mom and dad, your kids who are eligible to vote, the aunt that no one wants to talk to. Let's take one for the team and talk to them about voting. You have to be better organized. Because Matt Shea points out that folks in Eastern Washington overwhelmingly said no to 1639. That's not how this works. It's not how it works. I get mad when Democrats pull this kind of stunt. I'm going to get just as mad and annoyed when Republicans do it, and maybe even a little extra annoyed that we're trying to use this as an example of this is what happens when you get involved. No, no, no. You got involved on this one a little bit too late. The courts, I hope, are going to side with us on this one. I hope. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Mayor Jenny Durkin yesterday delivered the State of the City address. She did it. I don't even know where she did it because I just saw some videos of it. It's like, where
was it? At a podium.
I know, but on a stage that was poorly lit and made it impossible to videotape and or photograph.
Right, on a stage, podium.
It was awful, right? I'm not crazy. She gave this speech yesterday, and in it, she had her whole big list of things that she wants to do to make sure that Seattle is the city of the future, blah, 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 blah. But really, she wants to desperately be seen as someone who is progressive. Because I don't think she's a progressive ideologue the way I did about Ed Murray or Mike McGinn, the former mayors. I think she's clearly liberal. I don't think she's a progressive by any stretch. She's pretending to be because she doesn't want to upset the progressive base here. She wants to be able to count on them to stay in power and maybe even gain more power. I don't think she's a true believer in some of this stuff, which is kind of why when we see some of the things she does, like, oh, you're kind of half-assed that. What, couldn't do a little bit more?
Did you hear what she told Brandy Cruz? How some people accuse her of being conservative?
Well, she's definitely not a conservative.
Some people accuse her of being conservative.
I've never heard anyone accuse her of being a conservative. That's a lie.
Right, no one has.
But that goes to my point of she's super desperate to pretend that she's this uber progressive. And so yesterday, I'm calling it her new Green Deal. She came up with her own version. And part of that has to do with forcing, mandating new development to include a specific amenity, specifically the electric voltage chargers for electric vehicles, like the charging stations. Under her plan, if she were to get this pushed through the council, she would do something about 20% of any parking spots have to be specifically for electric vehicles to plug their batteries in so that they can move on. This is beyond ridiculous for a number of reasons. It's ridiculous and it's hypocritical. And weirdly, I think both conservatives like myself hate this idea and hardcore progressives like the militant bike community, they also hate this idea. We just hate it for different reasons. Number one, let's understand that suddenly she's doing something that could be deemed quote unquote pro car. The city of Seattle under Mayor Jenny Durkin and the mayors before her, under the Seattle Department of Transportation, they have purposefully made car ownership incredibly expensive and incredibly onerous. They have gone out of their way to design streets that cause car traffic while giving a pass to people who ride their bikes, and no one uses it because bike commuting is at historic lows. But they don't care. They're purposefully creating traffic because they want you to give up your car. But now all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, we want these parking spots for your cars. That's kind of weird. Number two, the argument coming from them in the past as to why they don't mandate parking spots in these developers to meet the actual demand, meaning if you've got an apartment complex with 250 units, you should probably have about 250 parking spots so that everyone who is there can own a car and put it in a parking lot. They've gone out of their way to take away those requirements, which then means what? Fewer parking spots, because the developer is not going to spend money on something unless they're forced into it because they are in the position of wanting a profit. I don't fault them for that. But in the argument of why they would allow for that, they would say in the past, oh, did you know that for every parking spot you force a developer to build, it's something like $15,000 extra in cost per parking spot? Or sometimes I've heard like $30,000. Like I've heard obscene amount of numbers. So they say forcing parking spots actually increases the amount of money you might end up paying in rent. It's a bad stat. It's a faulty stat. I've written about it at ktth.com if you want to look it up. But then if you believe that, why would you then force not just a parking spot, but a parking spot that can handle electric vehicles, which is more expensive than an actual traditional parking spot? Because you've also yesterday spent all this time talking about affordable housing. And so now you're mandating an amenity that virtually no one wants. because most people don't have electric vehicles. They have traditional cars. You're forcing that, which then increases the cost of an apartment rental or a home. Does that make any sense to anyone? It makes no sense. It's inconsistent. Now, funny, the bikers, the bicyclists, because they're really militant and crazy, they're upset because they don't think Mayor Durkan should do anything having to do with forcing car ownership or I suppose making it easier for car ownership. They're mad that she didn't put it all into forcing people to put in bike charging stations for e-bikes and forcing them into doing bike parking spots. So not even they are happy.
What if you could guess the percentage of people in Seattle or who work in Seattle that drive electric cars, what would you get? Would it be like sub 5%, you think?
Probably. I would have gone 5-ish percent. I mean, we're taking out city-owned vehicles, presumably. So I would say probably 5. It's probably way less than that. It's probably something like 1%. The vast majority of people who own cars are the traditional cars. Maybe they have hybrids. But let's not pretend that there's this huge demand for this. There is a demand for parking. There's a huge demand for parking. The reason why parking prices are so expensive in the Seattle area is because they don't require that you build enough parking, which means you cut down on the supply, but the demand hasn't changed. Not in any meaningful way. So then some people are spending. When I owned a car, I was spending $200 a month for parking. $200 a month. That's insane. If you want to read this story, you want to put a spotlight on it, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, go behind the scenes of the show. Head on over to facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. Hit the follow button. Of course, you can also follow us on Instagram and on Twitter. Just search for the name Jason Rantz. It's spelled J-A-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So this isn't a surprise to me, and I'm presuming it's not really a surprise to anybody in Washington State, but two universities, the largest universities in Washington, they've come out against this proposal that's being discussed in Olympia that would allow colleges to pay their college athletes. Now, since this bill was originally drafted by Drew Stokesbury, the Republican, they made some changes. Now, at the time, he told us this.
This does not say a school has to pay players. It doesn't say players have, have to get paid or have some sort of entitlement to be paid. It merely says they should be able to be paid if somebody wants to pay them, just like any other student who's not an athlete.
So along with pay for games, the proposal would allow student athletes, according to Cairo 7, to be compensated for sponsorship deals, similar to what happens in the NBA or the NFL. Basically, Nike comes by and says, hey, I like the forward for Gonzaga or UW, blah, blah, blah. I'll pay you X amount of dollars per year if you agree to endorse my product. In return, I get to use your likeness and your celebrity, as it were, to promote the product. Now, UW and Wazoo both objected to this idea, according to Cairo 7. And the reason why they did was they say this is not a state issue. This should be addressed on a national issue. And in a lot of ways, I totally understand that perspective. I actually happen to be against this bill. I don't think it's a good idea. I'm open to the aspect of paying for endorsements. But I think that that's tricky because you would still have to, you can't just get the likeness of the student. You have to get the likeness of the team logo and the school name. So it's going to be tricky. But I agree that if we're going to address this, we should address this on a national level because the NAACP, I mean, they are specifically dealing with 50 states, schools from every single state. And if you have a deal in Washington, which would allow you to get paid, you give an unfair advantage to Washington schools because the kid who otherwise would go play for Kansas or Auburn or whatever, they might then decide to come to Washington State because not only would they get to play, but they would have the opportunity to make some money. And while it's kind of weird for UW and Wazoo to take the position of we don't want to be put in a place where people will want to come to our school, that's not their reason. That would be my reason. But number two, I don't necessarily think we have to do this or should do this. I'm not moved by the argument that these student athletes are bringing millions of dollars into their schools because of the work that they're doing on the court or on the field. Like, I'm not moved by that because you are, in theory, supposed to be getting what? an education, a really good education. And if you're choosing not to take advantage of that education, or if you go for at a school that maybe, just maybe, isn't taking your education seriously, I think that you have to revisit your own motives here. I'm just not moved by this. What is your college education worth? Take advantage of that. Because the truth is, the majority of kids who are playing for any college team, you're not making it to the NFL, you're not making it to the NBA or the MLB or NHL or MLS. Maybe MLS you have slightly higher chances, because that's soccer. But the majority, you're not. So you're getting a free education that is worth how many hundreds of thousands of dollars? Because don't you get room and board as well as part of these scholarships and textbooks maybe? That's a lot.
At WSU, the athletes got a very nice dormitory. Incredibly nice. And do you think there's a correlation between the debate of paying athletes, you know, coming to the surface at the same time period that the value of a college education has sort of decreased? Is there a correlation there?
Say that again. A correlation between...
The debate to pay athletes has become more prominent, but also the value of a college education seems to have come down a little bit.
No. I mean, I don't think that that's true across the board. I think that's probably a case-by-case basis. So I don't necessarily see that. But I'm not going to pretend that I don't quite understand the position of some of these athletes who feel like they're exploited. But that's then don't play. I mean, this is an investment, right? Not just in your education, but let's say you play for free and you do really well and you get the sort of attention of scouts in any league. Well, then you're making millions of dollars, hopefully, in the course of your career. So I'm all for take advantage of this shot rather than getting mad that you're only getting $200,000 worth of free education. They're just weird to me. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Happening now.
So this just in. Jussie Smollett is now officially being classified as a suspect in a criminal investigation. Jussie Smollett, of course, the actor from Empire, who, according to the reports, committed a hoax in which he didn't actually get beat up by Trump supporters screaming, "This is MAGA country in Chicago." He didn't get beat up. He didn't get called names, slurs. He didn't have a rope put around his neck. He didn't have attackers pour bleach on him. It was all a hoax. And now, according to authorities, as reported by Fox News, Jussie Smollett has officially been classified as a suspect. In fact, Anthony Guglielmi, he is with the Chicago PD. He just posted moments ago an update to the case that says what I just said. Then he said that the criminal investigation for filing a false police report, which is a class 4 felony, he says detectives are currently presenting evidence before a Cook County grand jury. We understood that just moments ago, the two brothers who were identified as the alleged attackers, they were actually seen going into the grand jury room. And as a result of this, it would appear that the Chicago PD is going to charge Jussie Smollett with a false police report, filing a false police report. This is huge justice if true. And this is going to impact him because right now, yet again, earlier today, Fox Broadcasting, which represents Empire, the show, they came out and said he's a consummate professional on screen and on set, and we are backing our guy, basically. Which no one's accused him of not being a consummate professional on set. It's kind of being a hoaxer offset and creating all these problems. If this is true and he's charged, Fox will turn on this guy in a heartbeat, as they should. And all, you're going to see a level of anger coming from half of the progressive journalists out there and talking heads that gave him a pass and really used this to go after Trump. Half of them are going to turn on Jussie Smollett, and they're going to do so in an insufferable way. The other half is going to make excuses for the lie. And they're going to say he shouldn't even be, this is a hero. He's a hero because you know what? There are lots of actual hate crimes out there that aren't being given any attention. And through this hoax, he actually brings attention to the plight of gay men, African-American men, and gay African-American men living in Trump's country. Shame on this guy. And I cannot wait until they charge this loser who decided to waste resources of officers, throw him in jail.
You just can't do that, Jason.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
No, I know. No, I just said it was a class 4 felony.
Yeah, yep, you're right. You can't do that. Can't make up. Can't do it.
Was that in dispute?
Oh, no. Just can't do it.
And that's your take. That's your... Okay.
Just can't do it.
Is that like a hashtag?
No, you just made up a crime. Just can't do that.
You know, you can't do that anywhere. Like, that. This is not new.
You're can't do it.
No, I know, but I
yep.
No, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why you're saying it with such confidence, though. Like, and that's the bottom line. Like, we know. I know.
Bottom line, you just can't do that.
So, I mean, I just read a quote from the cop that said that.
Yeah.
So you're not adding to the conversation. You're just underlining a point that was not in dispute.
Just saying, you made up a crime.
You can't do
that. It was a hoax.
You can't do that.
You just can't do that.
Okay, fair enough.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Welcome back to the Jason Ranch Show. It's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. You see, the media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. We prefer not to be hyper-focused on Seattle. We want to talk about the communities you live in, the communities you care about. And we're going to completely ignore Seattle for the Big Local. And we start in Bremerton, where they recently had some white nationalists post some flyers that I think somewhat subtly promote hate. If you know what to look for in order to identify white nationalists, you would clearly see this as hate. If you don't, you're probably confused as to what exactly is going on. But it happened, and there's no doubt that this was a hateful move by whoever was responsible. It generally is one person or maybe a small group of people who will put all of these flyers up all around town. We had something similar happen in Tacoma and Everett and Bellevue a couple weeks ago. But it's not a huge group of people that are putting all this hateful stuff up. It's just a loser or two or three. But now the city council is passing a resolution in order to condemn it. The reason they're giving is absolutely absurd. In fact, we're going to try to get one of the council members on from Bremerton to talk about this, because this is just patently absurd. The Kitsap Daily News said local officials have been limited in their response to the posting because they all understand that this is free speech. You can't just mandate against this kind of content. But it's not stopping the city council there from moving forward with a resolution. And this resolution affirms, quote, the city's commitment to the principles of equity and inclusion. Now, Michael Goodnow, he's a council member there. And he recently said during a work session that, quote, we need a timely response to the actions that happened in the community. By the way, timely. This happened in January. We're already at the tail end of February. So this, I guess, timely from a government perspective is accurate. Then he went on to say, if we don't come out and say something, and this is the format that we can do it, then we seem sort of complicit with this kind of hate language being spread in our city. That is absurd. That is absolutely absurd. You mean to tell me that if you do not condemn the legal speech of someone in your community, you're complicit in it? So if I were to go out and put up a whole bunch of signs that say, I support building the wall, if you don't speak out against it, am I then to assume that Councilmember Goodnow supports it? That's absolutely ridiculous. This is a virtue signal. This is a virtue signal. And I don't even think they believe this. It's one of those cases like when the tide goes out, you find out who's swimming without their trunks on. That's what we're talking about here. He doesn't truly mean this, because if we were then to move forward with the next logical conclusion, well, you didn't speak out against this issue, and there was a flyer up on the wall, and the Kitsap Daily News wrote about the flyer, and you guys didn't, so you support it? Let's even go further than that. This story came from something that happened in January. It's now February 20th as I'm doing this show. So does that mean you kind of, sort of agree with the white nationalist stuff because you didn't really jump to get that resolution passed sooner? I mean, if you really cared about fighting white nationalism, you would have passed this resolution like the next day. Why'd you wait so long? No, of course not. This is absurd. And it gets even worse. It gets even worse. Because they continue to push more and more of the flowery language that doesn't really mean anything other than to identify themselves as progressives. The text continues, this resolution shows a commitment by the city that they wholly reject the promotion of any regressive ideologies that promote discrimination, bigotry, hatred, and violence. Of course, they're only talking about certain kinds of content. They're only talking about certain kinds of ideologies. Their ideologies are different. But then it goes on to say, city employees shall not ask for immigrant... This is totally separate, but in the same resolution. City employees shall not ask for immigration status from a residence and providing a service unless they require to do so by state or federal law. All individuals, regardless of their immigration status, must feel secure that contacting law enforcement will not make them vulnerable to deportation. Now, that has absolutely nothing to do with what Councilmember Goodnow said this resolution was all about. They're just trying to put into one resolution every single virtue signal humanly possible. They're not currently doing this. They're not currently asking the immigration status of individuals. They're just putting this in there because, again, they want to send the signal about specifically what they stand for ideologically, because I guess their voting record doesn't indicate that, because I guess when they go out and campaign, it's not enough. And what's bothersome about this is not everyone in the city or even on the council supports that language at the end there, but you're putting them in a position where now if they vote no on this because they don't like one particular part of the resolution, you can just say, oh, they voted no on the condemnation of white nationalism. It's absolutely absurd. Meanwhile, Marysville foolishly doesn't allow for pot shops to open. There's a moratorium there. Despite the fact that we overwhelmingly decided that we supported the legalization of marijuana. But there is a product that I think is incorrectly demonized and associated with pot that does actually get to operate in Marysville. The Marysville Globe reports the city's first CBD business is open and running. It's called New World Distributors. It's located in the former Foxy Lady Barista stand, which I did not realize that they had closed. Not that I would ever go there. CBD is, do you know how to pronounce this word?
I don't even know what it stands for.
Cannabioidal.
When I first saw that, I thought it had something to do with cannibalism, like humans eating other people.
No. I mean, it's cannabioidal. I just say CBD. Basically, it's the part, this is how I explain it. It's like weed, but there's no THC, so you don't get high from it. You get any potential medicinal effects of the CBD. It comes from hemp, but it's got no psychoactive formulation. So you can use CBD and not actually get high, which is why it's legal for anyone to use. I think you have to be over 18, maybe over 21 in the state of Washington. Some of the items that they have on sale there: oils, creams, lotions, balms, cleansers, shampoos, conditioners, coffee, tea, and even dog treats. That's kind of funny. Their number one seller is a hemp-intensive pain relief rub with emu oil. Their edible candies are an inexpensive way to give CBD a try at $5 a bag. Their gummy worms, cherry bombs, watermelon slices, along with belts and rings that come in a variety of flavors. I have been curious about CBD just because I like to think, I like to look into some of the more natural remedies, because I don't always want to put a whole bunch of weird chemicals on my skin or in my hair or whatever. Now, I'm not ever going to mess with my hair. I'm not going to test a product on my hair because it's the one part about me that I actually like. But I have used CBD creams before. In fact, I currently use CBD creams. Outstanding. Now, I have no idea if it's just a normal cream and I'm telling myself that it does something, but CBD is apparently an anti-inflammatory. And so I've been using it on my skin and I've seen tremendous results. I've used CBD chapstick. I think the name Chinooka, something like that, is the name of the company. And it's the best chapstick I've ever had. And I'm wondering, number one, if it actually works or if I'm telling myself it works, because I've been curious about it. Number two, if it does actually work, can we stop demonizing this product? Because it literally has nothing to do in any meaningful way with getting high. You do not get high by doing this. No. There's no high whatsoever.
I'm not a pot smoker, but what's the point of smoking or putting a product on if you're not, like, you know, going to do the trick?
Because it's just...
Okay, like, it's the same with like decaf coffee. Like, what's the point?
Well, decaf coffee is for idiots. But this is something different. Or for people who religiously don't have caffeine, for example. So, because I like coffee... I had I say that, but at the same time, I had decaf the other day. I thought it was actually really good, but I like the taste of coffee. But CBD is not about getting high. It's just a lotion. So you put a moisturizer because you have dry skin on, right? And it doesn't get you high, but that's not why you're putting the moisturizer on. You're doing that because you want to cure your dry or treat your dry skin. So that's the only difference is in this case, people say that CBD has these miraculous effects. It's not a miracle, but if it is in fact an anti-inflammatory, if you're using it to treat some of the inflammation in your body, then you would use it. It doesn't have anything to do with getting high.
Right, but there is lotion out there that does get you high, so why not?
Because not everyone wants to get high.
Well, then just use any other lotion.
But I'm saying this lotion could be better than the other stuff.
There's no way.
I'm telling you, for me, this chapstick is amazing. It's amazing.
Hemp doesn't make a product better at things.
That's just not true. Like saying salicylic acid, which is in some of creams for like acne. Yeah, I guess you could get the stuff that doesn't have that. But it doesn't necessarily work as well as the one with it.
I will get you. I will bring from my house like some working hands lotion.
Do I have working hands? My hands are delicate and soft already.
What are you using the hemp lotion for?
I use the chapstick.
The chapstick. I got chapstick for you.
I don't want your chapstick. It's got cream.
I'm not
going to
share my chapstick. It's fine.
Use chapstick.
There's no point. Like decaf coffee, it's like drinking not to get drunk. Like there's no point.
I'm going to strangle you. You owe me $5, by the way. You're listening to the Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. The Seattle Times wrote an op-ed under this guise of news in which they asked leading questions to, from what I can tell, hand-picked activist students so they can write a perspective that the Times actually agrees with. Regardless of what the kids were going to say, it's almost like they opinion chopped. And they asked three questions of these students. Number one, how do you feel your race has ever affected the way teachers interact with you and how? Do you think it's important to have teachers who come from a similar background as you? Why or why not? And then finally, have you ever had a teacher who was the same race as you? How did it affect your experience in that class? There's no huge bit of value, of course, if we're going to be honest, in having teachers that look like you. And if we followed this to its logical conclusion, we change virtually nothing because Washington is overwhelmingly white. Yet the call is for more teachers of color. They say that that's incredibly important. Yet the majority of students out there in this state, in this region, are white. And so do you or do you not want more teachers of color? If you do, well, then aren't you hurting a whole bunch of white students? And why is that okay? Shouldn't we come to a point where everyone is being treated fairly and getting the education that they deserve? If teachers of color are more important to the handful of students who happen to be black or Hispanic or Asian or Jewish or gay or whatever, then you're basically asking for segregated schools. And I thought we were beyond that. I hope that we had been that we'd be beyond that. Amina, a high school senior who identified as black, this according to the Seattle Times, she doesn't believe her race has ever affected the way educators interacted with her, saying she has always had good relationships with teachers. That's awesome. But, quote, sadly, I've never had a black teacher. I had a black substitute teacher back when I was a freshman for 3 days, and I realized when I had the black sub, I felt even more comfortable in my learning and even enjoyed it. I understood the content better. I felt comfortable because it was a teacher who talked like me and taught me in a way that I can understand. Okay, awesome. And I'm glad you had a really good experience, but my question then is if we are to believe that a teacher who looks like you physically is better suited to teach you, what about the white and Latino and Asian students? What about them? What about the Native American students? Are they then in a position where they're not getting the same level of knowledge that an African American girl would experience with an African American teacher? And if you're only comfortable, not that she is, but if you're only comfortable around people who look like you, then let me tell you something. Your parents and your school, they're failing you. They're failing you. Maddie, another eighth grader, identified as half white and half African American. She's one of the few black students in her highly capable cohort or gifted program, she said. She said, quote, I tend to feel that teachers don't prioritize my learning as much as white students. I don't think I've ever had a biracial teacher, and it has made it very difficult for me to connect to the curriculum in any class. If you've never had a teacher that prioritizes your learning as much as your white colleagues, and let's just say that that's true, let us take that as fact, not her perception, then your teachers are racist. Then your teachers are racist. And I know that we live in a state in which you're not supposed to ever call out teachers, criticize teachers. You're only supposed to do their work, their bidding, by asking that we give them more and more money. But if you're telling me, as a biracial student, you tend to feel that teachers don't prioritize your learning as much as white students, then we've got a major problem with the teachers' unions here, right? Now, I tend to think this is her perception, because she is someone who is being taught to assume that she's not getting the same level of educational care than her white colleagues. I think she's in a position where we're telling her to say that, where we've taught her to say that. I never had a Jewish teacher. I've never had a Jewish teacher. And to my knowledge, I never had a gay teacher. I ended up going to a good school. I ended up getting a good education. I ended up doing something with my life. Not once did I ever feel uncomfortable because I had a professor who was black. And I've had professors who were black. I've had professors who are women. I've had professors who are Asian. I had a German professor once. Never once did I come out of that school or any of those classes and say, boy, because that professor wasn't white, gay, and Jewish, I just didn't feel comfortable. If that's your takeaway, if that's what you're perceiving, you're either dealing with an actual racist in your classroom that you need to go out of your way to out. And if you're one of those students, feel free, send us an email at ktth.com. Hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on Facebook. I will investigate if you're telling me that as an African-American student, your white teacher ignores you or doesn't pay enough attention to you or doesn't treat you the same. I will out that teacher in a heartbeat if that's true. Or we're telling ourselves that this is important because it sounds right. Or that we're telling people that this is important because then maybe we can say we're progressive activists. You say something is important doesn't mean it actually is important. And if the data actually backs this up, that black students excel with black teachers and Latino students excel with Latino teachers, aren't you then making the argument for segregated classes? And isn't that immoral? Isn't that what we fought to go away from? These are questions that, of course, the teachers' unions won't answer. It is a question that, of course, the activists won't answer because they won't like the answer. They don't like the answer. But it's very easy to say, we want more teachers who look like our students. Okay, fine, but then you're literally closing out a whole bunch of other students. It's a Jason Rant Show.